Get off my world.
Whoa, hey, Destroyer, Brigadier, just relax for a second, okay? And let me talk to our listeners. There'll be plenty of time for the epic guitar battle that is our theme song in just a few minutes. Ladies and gentlemen, what you are about to hear is a podcast recorded live at Console Room 2015, The Twin Cities Dilemma. And what you are about to hear before that is our interview with the guest of honor, the Sixth Doctor himself, Mr. Colin Baker. So please, enjoy. We're at Console Room here with Colin Baker. Thank you so much for sitting down with us.
Well, it's easier than standing up.
It's true.
Thanks for joining us.
Pleasure.
You met Joshua last night.
I did.
The Five-ish Doctors. I'm Pat, and this is Kelvin.
Hello, Kelvin.
Hello.
And, we have a local podcast called Get Off My World, and so it's a real privilege to be able to
meet
you here.
You get off of my world.
We have a new theme song.
Yes, we do.
We do.
You won't remember, but the last time you were here in 1986, you would have probably signed autographs for both Joshua and I.
You were part of that huge queue, were you?
Yes.
Hey. Wow.
Stood in line for a long time for you.
I don't remember much about that day other than just sitting, signing. Is that all we did, sign?
You did, as I remember, answer questions from the audience, too.
Right.
And I think you might have broadcast some of the new shows that were on at the time.
Right.
Yeah, because there were no DVDs or VCRs, so
no.
It was really exciting just to stand in line,
yeah,
wait for an autograph, and watch the episodes again. So.
It's extraordinary, isn't it?
Yeah.
So is this a different kind of experience for you, being back?
Well, it's evolved over the years. I do a lot of conventions, and in a sense, you know, it could be Minneapolis and it could be Dusseldorf, where I was last week.
Sure.
Because I get off a plane, I go to a hotel, I hear people speaking with American accents or German accents, and they're all fans of the program that I made 30 years ago, and it kind of morphs into one great mass of hotels, aeroplanes, and fans. So people say to me, do you remember being at ZombieCon? And I go, no. What was the city? And they say, Cincinnati. Oh, I remember being in Cincinnati, yes. I remember the hotel and the airport. It's a shame that my wife tells me my memory is appalling. And the main reason I can't really write a halfway decent autobiography is what I forget. I mean, I've even forgotten. I met somebody recently. It's quite a funny story. I met somebody at a stage door recently. And I knew him. I said, hello, how are you? And we chatted for 15 minutes. And he seemed quite surprised. And I discovered later it was somebody that I really fell out with in a very bad way.
Oh, boy.
10 years earlier. And we screamed and shouted at each other. And I hadn't seen him since. And I'd forgotten I didn't like him. So what chance do I have of remembering an individual fan at a convention? If somebody, he was an idiot as well.
You
made
up with
him. I was nice to him.
And you didn't even know it.
I really regretted being nice to him.
Well, I hope he's listening.
Well, we're huge fans of your Big Finish work. We listen to a lot of those. And can you tell us a little what it is like to have evolved a character over 30 years?
Yeah. That's a rare opportunity,
yeah,
isn't it, that people don't often get? Yeah, because John Nathan Turner and I had this plan for Old Sixie that, you know, he would... I mean, I've said it time and time again, and you've heard me say it, but it's the old Darcy syndrome,
mm-hmm,
from Pride and Prejudice. You open Pride and Prejudice, you start reading, and within five pages you hate Darcy because he's horrible to everybody. And then on page 397, you discover, in fact, he's the only truly decent person in it, and he's been doing his best to help people, but without necessarily needing to be liked himself. And that is the kind of character I find interesting. Somebody who isn't easy to categorise until you really, really get to know them. And the closest friends I've ever made in life are ones like that. The people who initially I was ambivalent about. So I quite liked the idea, and it stemmed from the fact that the Doctor was going to have a troublesome regeneration. Because they discovered that doing it the way they did it with Peter was perhaps a mistake, because his companions had to carry him around for the first
yes,
two episodes, I think. So the energy of the programme was somewhat muted by that. So they thought I would come out at full pelt, but manic, And I thought that was interesting and brave. What I hadn't factored in was the fact that that episode of me being manic and unpredictable would be the end of a series in Britain. So, and there would be 9 months after that where where they were thinking I was a twat, basically. I don't know whether that's a word you could use on your podcast.
Oh, we can now.
And I bought into that, maybe foolishly. Even though right at the last minute there is a kind of almost trailer of the Doctor actually being okay, mm-hmm. A shared moment with Perry. But it did mean that a lot of people started from the point of not being very fond or not warming to my Doctor. And that was a cross I had to bear for a while. But Big Finish is the route by which I escaped from that particular trap. And they knew, Gary Russell and Nick Briggs all knew that, you know, we had a long-term plan for the Doctor. Peeling away the layers of the onion till you get to the sweet bit in the middle. And I don't know how many I've done now. 40 or 50, maybe more. Stories, anybody know?
I don't know how many, but it's been a good 15 years of Big Finish, right?
Yeah. And every story is so good. And I'm not a person who gets readily excited about much, but whatever approximates to excitement, it's when I read a new script, Big Finish script, because they are of a consistently high standard and an inventive standard, and they've given me some lovely companions that to show various facets of my Doctor, you know, whether it's Maggie Stables as Evelyn Smythe, who I loved working with because she really put my Doctor in his place.
Oh yeah, you guys had a great rapport.
School mommy, and he adored her. He absolutely adored her. And then, you know, the Charlie Pollard stories, that enigmatic girl that kind of piqued his interest. And of course we've got Nicola throughout, my original and therefore my companion. Mm-hmm. We've now got Flip, mm-hmm. Who's still around, possibly, I don't know. The lovely Flip, who was, again, the antithesis of what I'd had before, this kind of little vague streetwise kid from London that he got rather fond of. And now I've got, and I can't remember her name, Miranda Reason plays...
This is part of the Last Adventures, right?
The new one.
That, yeah.
The new stuff that's coming out with Miranda Reason, who is a 1940s army.
I'm excited to hear that.
Bright.
Yeah.
She's bright and organized and very clipped. And she's such a good actress, Miranda Reason. She was in Spooks.
Oh, sure. I've seen all of it.
She was the pretty one in Spooks.
That's saying a lot. There's a lot of pretty people in Spooks. So.
Yeah, she's the prettiest. And she's such a nice girl. They always give me nice companions because they know I don't like grumpy people who are kind of over serious. I don't like people who take... You take the job seriously while you're doing it, mm-hmm. but don't take yourself seriously.
Right.
Oh, that's the trap for an actor. Never take yourself seriously, and I've worked with actors who fall into that trap, and, oh, they're tedious. but, you know, we're very lucky to do the job we do, and I approach it with, I hope, utter professionalism, especially Big Finish. You know, like I do actually read them before I turn up in the studio. I understand that that is not... entirely a common practice, but I don't
among
know.
Other doctors,
I don't
naming names,
can't bring myself to comment. But I just love doing them, and Big Finish is such a great company to work for, and I'm delighted to hear that their license has been renewed again,
good.
Which shows remarkable good sense from the.
Oh yeah,
because I'd only realised recently that it was Russell T. Davies who. When the new programme was first, you know, happening, the BBC said, right, we'll call in all the licences then, if we're doing it ourselves again. And he said, not Big Finish. They can carry on doing it. No, we don't want them to. Yes, he said, leave them alone.
Oh, wow.
And Russell was the one who protected.
That's great.
Oh,
big finish. Yeah. And kept it going.
Clearly he listened to it, because one of our favorite audios is Jubilee by Robert Sherman, which was adapted. Yeah, mm-hmm. Nicked.
Which
yeah.
was nicked.
Yours is better.
Do you know, I prefer my story.
I do too.
I thought Christopher Eccleston was a magnificent doctor, but I didn't like them making him be so vitriolic about that Dalek. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was almost an irrational desire to destroy it. I preferred my dilemma, which was, yes, I hate Daleks and what they stand for, but this is torture. Mm-hmm. This is wrong. You can't do it. I think that was a much more interesting story, which is the one Rob Sherman wrote originally.
Right, yes.
And I like Rob's writing. I think Rob writes brilliantly.
Oh, yeah. I think it might be one of the best scripts ever.
I suspect he was forced to change that element of it.
Yeah.
But I loved Jubilee, yeah.
He's one of our favorites. We've reviewed several of his things on the program. The Holy Terror, another one of yours.
Yeah.
With Robert Jezek.
Yeah, I'd love to have the penguin back. But I was saying earlier that Jason Hay Gallery told me that it sold less than the allegedly canonical stories. But I think Nick Briggs, I said to Nick recently, can we have penguin back? He said, it is a thought, isn't it? Perhaps we could try again.
Well, we vote for the penguin. We enjoy it. And the Maltese penguin as well. The comic one was very good.
For sure.
Do you feel that the Last Adventure is going to give a final cap to your performances?
Yeah, I'd always resisted doing a handover story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, you know, I mean, it's all documented is my irritation when the way they did it, and B, the fact that they did it, of terminating my tenure so abruptly. And that was all kind of political. And I realized, with the benefit of hindsight, that I was a pawn in a bigger game that was going on at the BBC. But I always felt that if I didn't do a regeneration, then Sylvester McCoy was an imposter.
Yeah.
And all his successors, therefore, are imposters, like the false popes of the Middle Ages. So I am still the doctor, I would say, at conventions. And they started a new line of apostasy with Sylvester the first apostate doctor pope. And
that's a great theory.
Yeah. And now I'm going to blow it out the water because I kept saying, no, I don't want to. And then Nick Briggs said, I've got a really good story for you. And it is a really good story, and it is the way I would want my doctor to go. And also, there's all these conflicting areas about what happened between the trial and Sylvester. Mm-hmm. What happened, not between the trial and this, so there's lots of things happened then, but what happened at the end of the trial then, which has been resolved by the stories I did with Nicola, the widow, what's she called?
Oh, yes, the
Merry
you
Widow.
Go back for her, yeah.
You and I go back. That's been resolved. And now we want to resolve what led up to the regeneration. And the story he's come up with dovetails perfectly with what you saw with Sylvester floundering around in my coat like a beached minnow. For heaven's sake, he wasn't even man enough to wear the coat properly.
Well, do you get a last line then? Like an official last line? It's not carrot juice.
No. Ironically, I like carrot juice. The two things that people offer me at conventions if they think they need to feed me up is carrot juice, which I love, and chili babies, which I detest.
Oh.
Anybody like them?
No,
it's, not on this table.
If you've got a car tire and chopped it up and flavoured it, that's what jelly babies are. So I'm afraid I upset lots of young people by saying, no, thank you, they're vile.
I was curious about what you did in the stage production of Kind Hearts and Coronets.
Oh, wow.
Just because I would think playing the Gascoigne family, like, wow, what an amazing thing as an actor to be able to do.
Yeah,
a multiple-part thing like that.
I seized that with both hands. I was so overjoyed.
Yeah.
Because when they said we'd like you to do Kind Hearts and Coronets, I immediately thought they wanted me to play the, you know, the straight part, whatever his name is.
Yeah.
But that was Robert Powell.
Mm-hmm.
No, they wanted me to play the Dascoins. Initially, I was disappointed because there was no drag element involved.
Oh. Yeah.
Because in the
film...
You
weren't the suffragette?
No. And that was added at the request of Alec Guinness for the film.
Oh,
I didn't know that.
And it wasn't in the book that it was based on.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It was added because he wanted to drag up for whatever reason. and I'd have enjoyed doing that as well.
Of course.
But this was an adaptation of the book, not the film. So there were some of the storylines slightly different. But I got to play six different people, ranging from a young lad about town to a bishop and a general. And, of course, being on stage, it was very quick changes.
Oh, I know.
And on the first night, that we had a kind of trick thing where it looked like me going up the stairs, but there was a false staircase that the audience couldn't see.
Mm-hmm.
And I went down into that, and somebody else carried on. So...
Okay.
It looked like, as they left the stage, I came back on, completely changed.
Yeah.
But that never worked properly. So we had to kind of fudge around that a bit.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed doing it, and I felt a bit sorry for Robert Powell. He got really irritated by the fact that he was having to be straight all the time. And it was an open invitation to do caricature, really.
Oh, sure.
That's what those parts are, the devil, hell, cattle.
It's so much fun. I mean,
I had a blast.
Yeah.
I had a blast. Yeah, that was one of my favourite roles.
Mm-hmm.
That and a play I did called Corpse once, where I played twin brothers.
Okay.
One of whom was trying to kill the other.
Not the titular character.
Corpse, yes, it was.
Yeah.
Corpse was the titular character.
Yes.
But, I mean, that was fun as well.
Oh, wonderful.
Well, thank you very much.
This My very great pleasure. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you.
Such civilised gentleman.
Thank you, sir.
And my charming interlocutor from the other night.
We fooled you. We thought we were civilised.
Get off my world.
Get off my world.
Hi, I'm Joshua.
I'm Pat.
I'm Kelvin.
And this is Get Off My World. We're three guys and the occasional guest who love the classic Doctor Who series and try our best to love the new series, too. We'll take you through five rounds rapid and get to the bottom of what's great and not so great about our favorite show. Joining us today is special guest / my brother, L.A.-based geek comedian Joseph Scrimshaw.
Hello.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Oh,
thank you.
Woo. Mom wants you to call her.
Okay, just, I know.
I told her I'd tell you.
I will tell her it's her / son.
All right, well, let's kick off the podcast with round one, temporal grace. We can sometimes get a little curmudgeonly about the show we love, so that's why we like to start things off with something that makes us just uncharacteristically happy about Doctor Who. And since Console Room's guest of honor is none other than Colin Baker, we decided for this temporal grace, we would all share our very favorite Sixth Doctor story from any medium.
Yeah, unfortunately my answer isn't helpful because it's what we're going to discuss later. It's The Two Doctors. It's probably my favorite story. But I think my second favorite story is I was just listening to the audio Davros that stars as a Sixth Doctor. And since it's called Davros, it's kind of about Davros, so it's kind of a jerky thing for me to say. My favorite Colin Baker story is the one where he's not a main character. By focusing so much on Davros, it does actually bring out his character and what is similar and what is different than Davros. So that is my nice thing.
I can't remember, is that a sequel or a prequel to Revelation of the Daleks?
It is before Revelation of the Daleks.
Is that one of the big story arcs? There's the Master and Omega.
Yeah.
And
yeah, so it's a real character study in Davros, and it dances. That is a character study in Davros. It dances the line between being... It's not. I don't think it's trying to be funny, but it dances that line really, really close because Davros gets really quiet and really introspective. I have always been lonely. He gets really deep throated. So we get those private moments with Davros, and then
Dear Diary.
It's pretty much that. Are you there? It is me, Davros! And then Colin Baker bursts in, just say, you're evil, you're a jerk! And it brings out that interesting part of this Extector's character of being pompous and kind of barging in, and flips it in a cool way where we see that maybe he should be sensitive to poor Davros. It makes you think about that element of his character.
Well, leading on from Davros, my favorite is probably Revelation of the Daleks.
Yeah.
I think not only is that Colin Baker's best TV story, I'll separate them from now, because I know Pat's going to talk about the audios. I think it's one of my favorite, like top 10 favorite Doctor Who stories. You've got, obviously, like the Futurama Davros head, which is awesome. The script is so dark and funny at the same time. It's really like a love letter to Robert Holmes with all the double acts. I mean, there's like 18 double acts kind of going on in that alone. Graham Harper's direction is fantastic. And I think that whole first season Sixth Doctor's character arc sort of comes to fruition there, where he's still very caustic and arrogant, but you start to see a little more compassionate side to him when the DJ dies and when Orsini sacrifices himself. And Perry's proactive. She, like, kills a mutant with a log right at the beginning. So, yay! I love it.
Great Clue Doctor Who game.
Yeah. Oh, and Dr. Jor-Bell.
Oh, yeah.
He's so awful.
I think that's similar to Davros, where we see a contrast in the Sixth Doctor's, the sort of the aggressive side of his personality by everybody else being a bigger jerk in that story than the Doctor could possibly ever be.
So that's my favorite.
I think I'm probably going to have to go with Jubilee, the audio story. And we had discussed Jubilee on an earlier episode of our podcast, and I was a little nitpicky at the time about certain
what
elements in Jubilee. Like, the whole thing was kind of predicated on something that's not really explained, which kind of bugged
this
me.
This is your favorite Sixth Doctor story.
But yes. No, I think overall the positives were... We're very positive. It's a really
seems like a presidential press conference. I think overall,
teleprompter
not
working.
It's a really fascinating story. It's about an alternate timeline where Britain basically kind of becomes sort of the premier country of the world, kind of the quasi dictatorship of everything, because they managed to defeat the Daleks due to some kind of weird temporal thing involving the Sixth Doctor, which is too complicated to explain right now. Timey-wimey, all that. But, yeah, no, I really like Jubilee.
Well, my favorite is also an audio, and also written by Rob Shearman, who wrote Jubilee. Mm. The Holy Terror. We've talked about Rob Shearman a lot on this show. We talked about Dalek, we talked about Jubilee, and we talked about the Maltese Penguin, which also stars Frobisher, the giant talking penguin, Shapechanger, who's the main character in The Holy Terror, along with Colin Baker. The reason I love this one so much is because Rob Shearman, like in Jubilee, is an absolute master of balancing off humor and horror and having them kind of grade very carefully into one another, so that the things that you find funny at the beginning of the story are the same things that you find horrifying and will break your heart at the end of it. So I don't want to give too much away about it, except it does have a giant talking penguin. All hail Frobisher, all hail the big talking bird. It's sort of a theological, bureaucratic comedy. It's set in a kind of Gormenghast-like, enormous castle. And it's an Oedipal drama, and it's just full of great stuff. And the more I talk about it, the more I'm going to give away, so just go ahead and listen to it, I think.
So dark horror is what we like about the
yes.
Sixth Doctor.
We like it when the Sixth Doctor hangs out with jerks and monsters and penguins.
Round two, special topics Dalek, in which our special guest Joseph will surprise us with a special topic.
Joseph. All right. So the special topic I came up with is I want to know from you guys, you've watched Doctor Who your whole life, you know it's real, the Doctor shows up in his TARDIS and wants you to go with him. Would you actually go with the Doctor if he showed up in your bedroom tonight?
The first question is, which Doctor?
Yeah. Well, I thought that would be the first question. So, going deeper, whichever Doctor you'd like. So, a Doctor shows up in your bedroom. and it can be the doctor you want.
So it's a future female doctor.
I hope so.
Boom chick a boom bow.
Let's just say theoretically for you, Pat, super cranky William Hartnell shows up. He's just, Harrigan, get in. Do you get in?
And I know who it is.
He calls him Harrington.
He actually was called Harrington.
Like everyone.
Gets your name wrong. Harrington, get in. Know exactly who he is because you've watched the show, but like, just trying to imagine in reality, a cranky old spaceman comes in, yells the wrong name, and says, get in my box. Do you go?
Well, I'm going to have to say yes. Now, that might upset my wife. But, if I could somehow, lots of the companions are able to be returned to the same time that they left. So I'm not going to be marrying King Irkanos or something like that. Different planet. Ian and Barbara got back.
Yeah.
I mean, you might be marrying King Irkanos, but we will talk about it. So I would say yes, of course.
Okay.
It's, particularly if I miss a few days of work, I don't think anybody will care.
Yeah.
And, I really wanted to see the Vormis and the Animus in person and ride some Zarby. So, yes.
Nice. Would you ask him, if I go with you, may I ride some Zarby?
Well, I'm aware of how difficult it is for him to target the targets.
Yeah.
So I just got to, roll the dice on that. But, First Doctor adventures are not necessarily so brutal and horrifying and traumatizing the way some of, Colin Baker's were.
Right.
So I'm probably not going to get an acid bath.
You're probably going to do most of the work and then get yelled at by the doctor.
It's true. True. I should probably be in better shape because I'm going to be punching people.
So it's basically everyday life.
Right.
Yeah.
The First Doctor is, it's just like traveling with the horrors of the universe. You didn't do that right either. Right. So, Calvin, which doctor would you want to pop into your world?
Oh, boy. I think the second would be kind of fun.
Okay, so the second doctor comes.
Yeah.
The TARDIS materializes in your bedroom.
Yeah.
I don't know why it's in your bedroom, but it is now. And the second doctor pops out and says, come with me. Do you go?
First, I would probably check for, hidden microphones and things to see if this was some kind of reality show setup thing. And then finding out there wasn't any, would okay.
Would you wear a kilt for him?
if it meant I could, travel through time and space, I think that's worth a kilt.
What do you think you'd get out of it? Would you, what would you be looking for in your travels?
Not being bored all the time?
Not being
bored. How can you be bored in a kilt?
Really?
So is there a particular place that you would ask to go, or would you just say, I'll put on the kilt, take me anywhere?
I'm up for anything, really.
Another
I
got thing
it.
To
I'm, all, I'm all kilted up. I'm ready. I'm, take me where you may, Second Doctor.
Excellent. And you'd call him Second Doctor. You wouldn't start calling him Patrick Troughton, would you?
I'd probably have to force myself to just call him Doctor.
Yeah.
And not Second Doctor.
I think that would make the Doctor uneasy. You're constantly calling him Second Doctor.
You don't have much time left, Second Doctor.
Well, Second Doctor is a lot, it'd be a lot better than calling him, Number Two or something.
So is there a particular set of traveling companions that you prefer to be with? Like Ben and Polly? I've got to hang out with Ben and Polly. Victoria.
Zoe.
Probably Zoe and Jamie.
Zoe and Jamie.
Yeah.
That's the classic lineup, those three.
Yeah.
And Kelvin.
Yeah. And Kelvin in a kilt. Just sort of cosplaying Jamie with Jamie right there.
Nothing weird about that.
Most of your episodes would be lost.
Probably for the best.
Yeah.
I'd like to have a lot of lost episodes with the Doctor and Jamie.
Before the night is through.
All right, Joshua. A Doctor pops into your room.
Yep.
One of the incarnations of the Doctor. Which Doctor would you want to go off with?
I'm tempted to go with, Tennant, just to knock him into shape. Tell him to shut up and stop whining.
It would be weird for him to be around somebody who is really critical of him.
I'd be like, buy a suit that fits you.
Yeah. You just start singing the Ghostbusters theme, and you just be like, shut the F up. Why do you know the Ghostbusters theme, Doctor?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have as much fun, but I think the universe would be better for
it. I think you'd eventually. I think you'd bring out the brooding side in him.
You think so?
Yeah.
I think he definitely has a lot to brood about.
Yes. He's definitely the rainiest Doctor. You would get you would get the most wet traveling with him. Because he encounters rain more than any other Doctor.
He's like Bad Luck Schleprock from the old Flintstones cartoon. He was like this guy who had bad luck, and like there was a little rain cloud that was always over his head.
Oh, yeah.
I'll be bringing up even more obscure references.
So would you want to be alone with him, or would you want one of the other companions to be there as well? Would you want Rose, or Donna, Martha, Captain Jack?
It's so hard to choose none of them. No, I think just me and Ten, and if I could just convince him that he's not at all intimidating or ominous, then I think we'd have a lot of fun.
Yeah, if you could get him to back down and like, hey, go ahead and threaten people, but you gotta back it up. Because like so many times he's like, I am the last Time Lord, I am all power, I dropped my screwdriver.
No second chances. Possibly a third, fourth, or fifth. But no second ones.
Then I'll trap you in a pane of glass or whatever. Yes. But yeah, and do something horribly brutal. Cool.
And you?
Oh, my. Well, yeah, I would certainly go with the Doctor. I think I would go with the Doctor with the lie that he could bring me back to exactly where I'd left off, so I wasn't missing any of my real life.
Yeah, you have to go with that. Otherwise,
you have to go with that lie, because otherwise you're just like, abandon everything. Abandon my life, abandon my friends, my loved ones. But yeah, let's say the Doctor I would want to go with, I think I'd want to go with the Fifth Doctor so I could try to cheer him up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, he was always kind of, like,
he's a sad clown.
Yeah, I would like to take care of him, because his whole era is, the TARDIS, at least in the TV shows, the TARDIS is just like this kind of daycare center for young, troubled kids. Yeah. And I'd be like, you know what, let's just sit around the TARDIS, let's go to some peaceful, tranquil place, and just, you tell me about your problems.
Yeah, go to the Eye of Orion.
Go to the Eye of Orion.
You know, he's a dangerous Doctor to be around, though.
Because,
like, everybody dies.
Yes.
In the Caves of Androzani, I think, like, almost literally every single person you see on screen dies, including Peter Davison.
Yeah.
He's always there should have been another way, but there wasn't. Let's go.
Yeah, and he really claims to have more control over the TARDIS than he does. He doesn't have, I mean, it's starting to develop, but just enough for him to have hubris that he could get me back. Yeah, so I think he would probably say that he could get me back. He would land somewhere and just open the door into a black hole. I would be sucked in and forgotten forever. Yay!
He'd open the door and it would be like Amsterdam.
Well, that would be fun.
Yeah.
Like, wait, why are we doing in Amsterdam all of a sudden?
That would really be fun. I've never been to Amsterdam.
Yeah.
I would love to see the Fifth Doctor imbibe some of Amsterdam's signature product.
I see a giant chicken. So yeah, we're all pretty much gonna go with our respective Doctors, and we can have crossovers.
Yep. Yeah.
We can all get together again.
Oh yeah. Wives and girlfriends apparently be damned.
I'm gonna make it back, baby. I'll show up. Sure. You won't even know. I'm calling from Amsterdam.
No, honestly, I'm later. The Doctor. It's cool.
Joseph, how did your hair get significantly more gray in one night?
Amsterdam, baby. Amsterdam. Round three, the randomizer. Usually the guys discuss a story selected completely at random, but again, since Colin Baker is the guest of honor, we rigged the randomizer so we could talk about the two Doctors. As I grew up into the world of Doctor Who, and talked to more fans at conventions, that I was shocked to discover that most people are like, the two Doctors,
me too.
I love it.
I did a rare thing before this. I actually read other reviews, which I usually don't do, and each review I read, I went, what? How dare you? What?
I have to use my squeaky voice.
I turned back to the 13-year-old who saw the two Doctors.
Yeah.
That's impossible!
Well, Joshua and I saw two Doctors really early on in our viewing, which I think is the big thing. At Convergence, I was talking to Paul Cornell, Doctor Who writer, and I had told him that The Two Doctors was one of my favorite stories.
And he hit you.
He came really, really close. I've told him two of my favorite episodes, and he's disapproved of me both times.
What was the other one?
I think you disapproved of me as well, but Pyramid of Mars.
Really?
I didn't disapprove of that.
Yeah.
I disapprove of The Two Doctors a little.
Yeah.
Yeah, Pyramid of Mars, that's one of my all-time favorites.
Pyramid of Mars is great, but I do think there is the British-American differences, and then I think there is certainly the age perspective differences. Like, Two Doctors was maybe like the second or third episode I saw, so it was a great introduction to the whole world of Doctor Who, to see the actual different Doctors together, and see the kind of variety of companions and see some very, very different monsters and some very classic monsters is a great little snapshot of what Doctor Who is.
So you guys, I'm not actually checking my phone. I took notes on this episode, okay. And then the iPad died, so I have this tiny little font that I can't change, but there's so much good stuff here, you guys. There's so much good stuff here.
There's so much good stuff. Okay.
So, well, here's the thing about the two Doctors, right? It's totally bananas.
It's pretty bananas.
It's really weird.
It is a dark comedy. I don't think you can appreciate it without considering it a dark comedy, and I think it's intentionally a dark comedy.
Yeah. It's a little unclear exactly what it's going for thematically, too. Because on the surface of it...
Eat more meat. I think that's the theme.
Yes.
I think it's be who you are, honestly. There's no podcast that can capture the look that Pat
face that Pat just gave.
We need video to get Pat's interesting what the heck expression.
Well, so
was that the look Paul Cornell gave you?
Pretty close. The British version of that.
I should say that I actually like the two Doctors quite a bit. I watched it again for this podcast. But if you really take a critical eye to the thematics of it, it seems on the surface of it to be like the most racist thing imaginable.
Yeah.
Really, like every few minutes, somebody's saying, "Oh, an androgum can't possibly change into anything else. Oh, you're trying to make an androgum into a human. That's ridiculous." The second Doctor says it. The sixth Doctor says it. Everyone else says it as well, and it is proven by the plot itself that even Chassini reverts to this barbarous attitude toward the end. She can't stop, but lick the blood off the ground, and so it's really kind of disturbingly like those people should know their place.
Yeah,
and they shouldn't try to get above themselves.
That was a hard thing for me to get past the first time I saw it.
If racism takes an episode of Doctor Who off the table, we're losing a lot.
Come on.
Well, that's true.
Not untrue, yes.
There's a sort of unreflective Robert Holmes racism that you get in Talons of Wang Chiang, but then there seems to be the Robert Holmes that really wants to talk about racism.
Which I think in some ways this does. It's a little like, God help us, Power of Crawl, and that it is both critiquing racism and racist stereotypes, yet participating and kind of reveling in the genre conventions around them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I can certainly see the racism, but I always took it as more trying to just let yourself be who you are a little bit of that, science shouldn't mess with nature, which does verge into racism pretty quickly. But I feel like it's reflected in the side characters that everybody's kind of striving to do something. Like, I think the actor character can be just seen as like a random side character, but that he so wants to be something. Mm-hmm. He's trying very hard to be this version of himself. And then that's sort of reflected also in all of the weird mechanics with the TARDIS suddenly needing DNA, that idea of it is a core to Time Lords, that they are the ones who travel in time. So it can be kind of exclusive, but I think looking at it from a more positive perspective, it can be that sort of like everybody is fine with what they are and can excel in some way in what they are, so why don't you excel at what comes naturally?
Yeah.
So Pat's behind what you
have to say. A nice non-committal, yeah.
You're a guest.
I have had many drunken arguments with Pat. I have no notion that I'm going to convince him of this, but I like saying it anyway.
I've gotten significantly more fond of the two Doctors over the years. The first time I saw it, I really didn't like it much at all, beyond the inherent cool factor of multiple Doctors. But the first time I saw it, the androgums really bugged me. And this is a really weird reason for them to bug me, but they struck me as like a really weird stereotype of the Scottish.
Yeah.
They have bushy red eyebrows. Their outfit is kind of quasi-Scottishy looking. I mean, there's kind of a Tam O'Shanter hat.
Yeah.
And the super meat-heavy diet. and Jamie is also in the story.
Yeah.
And the second doctor, like...
Speaking in his mongrel
dialect. Yeah, tells him, like, quit speaking in that mongrel dialect. And it's, like, a pretty mild Scottish.
He calls him a hairy-legged Highlander.
Yeah.
But and then he makes fun of Brigadoon. It's really mean. No reason makes
so
fun of Brigadoon.
The semiotics of Shockeye are, like, the way he looks is, like, very strange. Because there is that Scottish element.
They're trying really hard to do something
there's
different.
Also, you know? Like, Central Asian. Like, Afghani.
Yeah, I can see
there's
that.
A scimitar, and there's the thing he's got, and all the little, like,
accoutrements.
But as far as, like, companion crisis, just putting aside the racism for just a minute.
Racism.
In terms of companion crisis, it's not a twisted ankle, it's not I'm going to hold him for leverage as a doctor, there's a whole B-plot of, I'm going to eat him. I'm going to get both these companions. Like, that makes for an exciting episode where nobody is being sidelined.
It's true.
And it's not at all a metaphor for sex. Not at all!
But
it's unusual in that Jamie is put in exactly the same sort of peril that Perry is.
Yeah.
Trussed up, unconscious, and about to be eaten on the block. So kind of feminizes him in a strange way that he never really got in the Second Doctor stories.
Yeah.
Well, I do think in some ways the... eating the companions plot and the whole meat and the whole racism all go together in that a stew of some kind. Where was I going with this?
I don't know.
No, but everyone is presuming that there's someone below them that is lesser and feels less, and their feelings don't matter, and maybe I'm kind of trying to back you up.
No, I think so. I think
both the doctors, in a weird way, especially with the second doctor adopting this season 6B, which you won't get into, working for the Time Lords, he's kind of adopting this very Time Lord attitude toward the races. It's almost like when he comes in and is talking to Starry, he's playing a role. He's the ambassador for the Time Lords, so he's being more officious and more insulting.
Yeah,
he's always been the most xenophobic doctors. I mean, what his famous line is like, he's like, there are some corners of the universe which have bred the most terrible things, things which act against everything we believe in, and they must be fought. He's, kind of he's the monster killer Van Helsing doctor.
I've never thought of him that way, but that makes sense.
You know, I mean, I think it's fair. I think if there's a thematic direction to the show, it's the kind of what you're saying, that you can bracket off other living things into an area where you can just say or do anything to them, and it doesn't matter. You can eat a living human being because, they don't feel pain the way that we do. Mm-hmm. Shockeye says as much. The old Descartes argument about animals not being able to feel pain.
Right.
For me, it's just always so fuzzy. I don't really know what's going on in this. I don't know that there's a particular authorial point of view that Bob Holmes is trying to get across in it, and so it winds up being very blurry to me about what the thematics
are. Yeah, it's cool that we've talked this long and we haven't even mentioned this on Times.
why are they in this
There's
story?
No reason to be that, for them to be. First, they're awful. They have terrible masks. Their masks have never been worse than in this. And so I think they're only there because this was the season that JNT insisted that there be something from the show's past, some monster from the show's past in every single episode of the season, right?
So I felt like they had to bring like a particularly big villain from the past in because, like, well, there's more that, you know, it's a multiple Doctor story, so we have to have some big villain, and they just did the Cybermen, and they were going to do the Daleks. You know, what's left? Centaurans.
They're totally superfluous.
I have to admit, I love the end scene where it almost is farcical, like Benny Hill music should play when the Centaur just keeps getting screwed over. It's like, acid falls on him. I'm going to get in the time machine. Oh, God, it's freaked. Yeah. Oh, I'm going to go back to my ship. It blew up.
Group Marshall Stike.
I love
is
that.
Just,
yeah.
And then finally he's got his leg.
It's a harsh criticism of the military perspective. That's what it's about. With a little bit of racism in the old stew.
The show is sadistic in that way, right? I mean, Group Marshall Stike is really his protracted death it's hilarious, but it's also like there's no reason for it to happen. It happens off
stage.
Other
than it's hilarious.
Yeah. It's of a piece with other sadistic things that happen in it. Oscar getting murdered is the big one, right?
Yeah.
You're just like, oh, that comic relief character just got stabbed and bled out to death in front of
again.
And it's played for laughs.
Yeah.
Successfully, in my opinion.
And shortly thereafter.
Again, the first time I saw it, the whole Oscar character really
I really hated the Oscar character the first time I saw
so
this.
You're like, stab that mother.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's like this sort of, you know, the stereotype of the overly theatrical actor guy, and it's like, yeah, okay.
And he's working as a waiter.
And then he gets killed, and then the doctor's like, well, and then, you know, like, there's no particular mourning about his death or anything. They just go.
Anita's sad. His girlfriend.
Anita is sad, but you know, I've gotten less annoyed by Oscar as the years have gone by, but the first time I saw it, I was like, oh god.
One of the things I appreciate about the two doctors is I do think it's really funny, and the density of the jokes and the lines. I think you don't think that it was intended to be funny.
I don't think it was.
You think that was actually meant to be a moving death scene that's not satirical?
I kind of think it was.
I
think it's sadistic and meant to be
funny.
It's
dark humor. Yeah. Sadistic humor, which
I thought it was trying to be like poignant for a thing that didn't really earn it.
Yeah, I mean, Oscar's a comic character. Yeah. I mean, to me, this reminded me, I know it's a little weird, of a Raymond Chandler quote, this whole
okay.
Two Doctors plot. He's talking about hard-boiled mysteries, but Raymond Chandler says that scene outranks the plot when he's writing these hard-boiled mysteries, in the sense that a good plot is one which makes good scenes. The ideal mystery is one you would read if the end was missing. And if you substitute serial for mystery, I think, A, that says a lot about Doctor Who in general, yeah. but B, a lot about this story, is that Holmes is just writing these scenes and he's relishing them, whether they add to the plot. You know, it's like, let's get the doctor to a restaurant with an androgum and they just eat until they're going to throw up, and then they stab a guy. It's like, this would be a great scene.
I will say that my favorite thing in the whole story is Patrick Troughton when he's been androgummified.
That's amazing great. Acting. It's really good. Acting. Yeah, shows off Patrick Troughton.
I mean, another thing that annoyed me when the first time I saw this was it kind of bugged me that the androgums weren't more inhuman looking. Like oh, they just really cheaped out on the makeup. But now I watch and I realize, oh, they needed to be designed that way so Troughton could do kind of maximal hamming it up
yeah.
stuff. You know, you can see his face like, well, that's because you had Andrigum now. Oh! You know. That was a terrible impression.
I think Holmes must have had a lot of fun writing those, that list of French high cuisine that I can't even remember what any of them are.
Yeah, the super elaborate
dishes. The first
dishes.
Things out of yeah. Patrick Troughton's mouth are this French dish, that French dish. Oh.
Yeah.
So I think he was relishing just being able to put that sort of thing in Doctor Who. Because I think at this time in the show's history, Bob Holmes is doing whatever he can just to have fun and to push the boundaries mm-hmm. of what the show is capable of. And when else in the show's history would you have the Doctor suffocating someone to death with cyanide?
Yeah. Didn't he in Brain of Morbius? Didn't he, not suffocate him, but didn't he put cyanide in someone's... Cyanide gas.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry, if it's in gas form, it's humane.
But that's exactly the point. Right?
It is. It's definitely less visceral mm-hmm. than to like hold it to someone's
yeah.
face.
Yeah,
it didn't actually kill anyone, too.
Like, see, it didn't actually kill
anyone. It's like a tasting. Yes. Andrew Gums never tasted cyanide. So he's introducing him to a new...
It tastes like bitter almonds and sleepy for some reason.
But yeah, in that sort of spectrum of what Doctor Who can be, I think it is cool that episode pushes it in a lot of different directions. It was cool to see early on to see that there can be multiple Doctors, to see the Doctor be that proactive and violent,
yep.
which is not ideally where I want his character to land. But in the spectrum of what Doctor Who can be, it's cool to see some episodes where he is more of a hero, of an action hero.
I'll agree with you there. On the spectrum of things that Doctor Who can be, I'm okay with it.
So in conclusion, the Scrimshaw brothers give it two enthusiastic thumbs
up. Woo! These guys?
I give it a thumb at about, let's say 10 o'clock.
I give it
great visual for the podcast.
Yeah.
The old 10 o'clock thumb.
It's a big thumbs up for me, too, even with all my, actually because of all my reservations,
cool.
because it's so strange. You have to see it. Round 4, which we call Wonderful Afunctionalism, and this is just a whole bunch of other random stuff that we don't have space for. In this particular live recording, the Scrimshaw brothers are going to present a short sketch entitled Doctor Who, You're Doing It Wrong. As our sketch begins, a mid-level TV executive calls for his trusted administrative assistant.
Skipper! Skipper, get in here!
Yes, LT, what is it?
I got a big meeting with the head of the Pointless Remakes department, and I need a fresh take on some tired old TV show, and I need it pronto.
Okay, what about...
The Waltons? I love it. Only in this version, the Waltons are a family of degenerate drunks, and Walton's Mountain is haunted by the vengeful spirits of dead lumberjacks. It's the Waltons meets Shameless meets American Horror Story.
Actually, you can't remake the Waltons because CBS is bringing it back next year. It's Law and Order, Special Waltons Unit. Just a bunch of cops investigate only crimes that involve the Waltons.
Damn it! What about the X-Files?
Coming back next year.
Muppet Show?
Coming back next year.
Twin Peaks?
Coming back next year. Unless David Lynch quits again.
The Simpsons!
Still on the air.
Seriously?
Yes, most of the people who work here are younger than that damn show.
Heroes!
They're rebooting just the first season of that one next year.
Full House! And if you say it's coming back next year, I will punch you in the throat.
In that case, I will say it's definitely not coming back next year. But for some mysterious, unrelated reasons, John Stamos is gainfully employed for the first time since the Clinton administration.
Damn it! How are soulless TV executives like me supposed to resurrect classic TV series if they won't stay dead?
Well, you can always take a successful, currently running British TV show available for any American to watch on Netflix, Hulu, or BBC America and remake it with the exact same scripts, but set it in America with American actors, or maybe even the exact same British actors, only using mediocre American accents instead of their ugly, impossible-to-understand British ones.
That's brilliant!
No, that's just Broadchurch. Broadchurch.
Oh, what about Doctor Who?
That's not a bad idea. It's a recognizable brand with a built-in fan base and a rich 50-year history.
Why not bastardize it for a cheap buck, right?
Is that a rhetorical question?
Does a Dalek crap in his bonded polycarbide armor?
Rhetorical it is. So where do we start?
The name. It's terrible. Sounds like somebody gave Theodore Geisel an honorary medical degree. We need something hip and edgy, like Dr. WTF.
I'm not sure the fans would like that.
We'll just tell them it stands for What the Fenric. They'll eat it up like jelly babies.
Ooh, product placement. I bet Hershey's would pay through the probic vent to get one of their candies on the show.
How about Hostess? Then we can have the doctor sashay up to a sexy alien and say, care for a ding-dong?
I'm not sure we could convince Peter Capaldi to do that. Not without him calling it an MFing ding-dong.
Oh. We're not using Capaldi. Too old and way too Scottish. He's like an andragum. This is Doctor Who, not Highlander. Ooh, Highlander!
Coming out next year.
Damn it!
With andragums.
Mm.
Maybe we could give it the CW treatment.
Ooh, yeah, we could cast What's-His-Face as the Doctor, that super ripped guy from Arrow.
Or What's-His-Butt, that super ripped guy from Supernatural.
Ooh, or What's-His-Dink, that super ripped guy from Whose Line Is It Anyway?
What?
I thought we were just listing shows in the CW. My bad.
Let's just agree it's a super ripped guy and move on.
Ooh, what if our super ripped doctor always lands on lava planets that are so hot, he has no choice but to slowly peel off his tight ? T-shirt?
Yes, I mean, why even give him a shirt in the first place? Maybe his costume is just a British roll-up hat and one of Leela's old thongs.
But where does he put the hat when he rolls it up?
I don't know.
Ask Captain Jack! I love it. Are you writing any of this down?
No, are you?
No. Hey, you know who can make a killer companion? That chick from Pitch Perfect 2.
Which one?
Who gives a Fenric? Let's just cast them all. We can call them the Cloister Bellas.
Yes, yes, and whenever there's danger, they can warn the doctor by breaking into a Miley Cyrus medley.
Ooh, what about the doctor's time machine, the one with the stupid acronym?
The TARDIS.
No, Tomtit.
I'm pretty sure it's the TARDIS.
TARDIS, Tomtit, what's the difference?
Well, one is actually the name of the doctor's ship, and the other is the name of a nonsense machine from a 40-year-old story everybody hates.
Well, everybody's wrong. It's my Pointless remake, and I say it's Tomtit.
Yeah, okay, Tomtit it is. Hey, that's actually pretty fun to say. Tomtit.
See, I told you. Tomtit.
Tomtit. Tomtit. Tomtit. Tomtit.
It works. It's gold, yeah.
Tomtit. tempted. We forgot about the Daleks.
Ooh, one thing's for sure. We're ditching the plungers.
I don't know, LT. Those plungers are pretty iconic.
That's why we'll play it safe and stick with the plumbing motif. Toilet snakes.
You want to replace the Daleks' plungers with toilet snakes?
Yeah, you know, for whipping the Robo-Man, who will also be super ripped and shirtless. What do you say?
What I always say when you try to sneak strange sadomasochistic toilet weapons into a family show. Let's check with legal.
Oh, why are we wasting the Daleks on a crappy Doctor Who remake anyway? I smell a spinoff.
Which could also be a crappy remake of a successful British show.
Ooh, I know, Dalek Abbey.
With Maggie Smith as the Dalek Empress.
Ooh, what about Dalek Master Plan Theater?
Yes, with your host, Alistair Gordon Lethbridge Cook.
Ooh, presenting the television premiere of David Mamet's Glengarry Davros.
Oh, cut, that's a wrap.
Oh, bring in the test audience.
Get in here, nerds. Okay. I thought I heard a cat for a moment. I was mildly distracted. Okay, nerds and cat, here's the concept. An American remake of Doctor Who called Dr. WTF, starring some ding-dong scarfing super rip guy from the CW and the chicks from Pitch Perfect flying around in their Tom Tit, fighting armies of foul-mouthed Dalek salesmen led by a mutated Maggie Smith.
And don't forget, they have toilet snakes instead of plungers.
So what do you think?
That is the worst idea in all of recorded time.
It's an affront to human dignity.
You, sir, are history's greatest monster.
Okay, yeah, but would you watch it?
Well, yeah, it's Doctor Who.
Oh, we're not done.
Round 5, the Death Zone. In this round, we take two Doctor Who stories or characters from any medium and throw them into the death zone to see which one wins. Today, we're doing a special lightning round version based on your suggestions. And so, oh my, this is a fat stack here. Our first fight is, we got another one. Okay. John Pertwee's bouffant versus Tom Baker's teeth.
Yeah.
So, there's two ways to take this, gentlemen. Which one would literally win in a fight?
Right.
And which one do we merely prefer?
Well, Tom Baker's teeth would win in a fight because it's teeth.
It's teeth.
It's an actual weapon.
Versus hair.
Yeah, but I mean, how do you get rid of teeth? You wrap something around them and pull them out. So yeah. Hair. You can use his hair to pull his teeth out.
And that is pretty freaking annoying.
I
got to say that John Pertwee's hair has staying power. I imagine Tom Baker's teeth are probably less powerful than they were back in the day. But if you look at John Pertwee and the Five Doctors, his hair just gets more and more powerful.
So, guys, we got to call this bouffant or teeth?
Bouffant.
Bouffant.
Teeth.
I'm going with bouffant. Mainly because it's fun to say.
It is.
Bouffant. It's like the hair version of Tom Tit.
Well done, John Hartley's hair.
All right. We are going to do, I'm picking them now. The Twin Dilemma versus Time Lash.
How can you choose between the two best stories of the year?
Colin Bacon wrote that one, didn't he?
He's in the audience.
I don't even know where to begin.
Time Lash it is.
I say Time Lash.
I say Time Lash.
I'll say Time Lash just because I like doing the Borat's voice.
Yeah. Do it for us.
The Borat doesn't want to... That's a terrible Borat.
Well, you didn't say you like doing a good impression.
You like doing the voice that you call the Borat.
Yeah.
I like doing my President Obama impression.
Hi, everybody!
Time Lash it is!
Time Lash!
All right. Romana, back from E-Space, versus Jenny, the Doctor's daughter. So I think this is a real fight.
Romana back from E-Space.
It implies that she's learned great fighting skills while in E-Space.
So wait,
okay. I thought it was like she has some attitude.
Is this Romana, like, before she's become the Lord President, as depicted in some of the audio stories?
That's a huge canon argument, man.
I don't want to open that.
I think because it's not specified within the question, we can determine for ourselves.
All right.
So let's say she is President of Gallifrey.
Yeah, so I think she just erases Jenny from the timeline as should have been done long ago, and we're done.
Well, it is also like, it, yeah, it's just a battle of names between Lord President Romana and Jenny.
Who do you think wins in that fight?
Lord President Romana is going to win.
Man, what did they call her? The doctor's daughter, anyway? It's just a... Okay, we did the podcast. So dumb.
Yeah. Handles versus Chameleon.
Oh, boy. Oh.
Oh, Handles.
Handles was more animate.
It's mean to vote against Chameleon because he is sad. He's sad, Chameleon, yeah, in every way.
I mean, if we were talking about like sheer power, like a physical fight, then Chameleon's got to take it. But in terms of providing emotional support, I think Handles is the winner.
I think just as a prop, Handles can move more than Chameleon was able to move.
I got to go with Handles.
All right, yeah. Handles wins.
All right.
All right, Cybermats versus Green Maggots.
What do you want crawling underneath you? Interesting. Cybermats versus Green Maggots. Well, Cybermats certainly have a lot more appearances, right? So they know their way around better than Maggots. I mean, Maggots are pretty much just whales.
I mean,
not
what?
Let me be
They're
more
in
clear.
Whales.
Maggots
whales
are infested. In whales.
Okay.
They
okay.
live
I,
in...
I think maggots are larval flies. I don't think they're cetaceans.
Right. No, whales is in on the island of Britain.
Yeah.
Oh!
They never made it out of Wales in the Green Death.
Yeah, what a farcical misunderstanding that was.
It is funny how sometimes words mean two different things.
Well, I'll say Cybermats because they actually have an intelligence.
Yeah, they're directed by an intelligence.
And green maggots are literally...
Well, I got to totally agree with that, especially if we can do the Cybermats with the big googly eyes.
Yes.
I love those guys.
Yep, Cybermats.
So they win on pure cuteness. That's pretty impressive. All right. We've got this weird Rose versus Ace and Ace versus Leela. Should we just throw them all together?
Yeah.
And just a huge knife fight? Oh, I might have slipped
with
my bias.
If it's a knife fight, I think we'd always win it.
Yeah.
Are they going to cook? Oh, yeah. Nice.
Wow.
Thank you. This is 2015. So this is a battle to the of some nature.
Okay. So yeah. we'll do a preference battle?
Yeah. And then a fighting battle?
A fight
just which is a better companion, and then which would kill each other.
Okay, Leela's got Janus Thorns. Ace has a baseball bat and explosive vials of liquid.
Rose used to work at a shopping mall. So she has access to weapons?
She's a gymnast.
Yeah?
She has a gymnast. Swing on the thing.
It's true. She is encouraged to be very proactive, more so than other companions. So maybe if they were in an arena, she might be a little bit more resourceful.
I think Rose is dead in 2 seconds.
Yeah. I mean, probably. Yeah. I thought we were going to talk about preferences. I mean, if it's a fight,
yes.
If it's a fight, Leela's going to kill them both.
Yeah,
very, very quickly.
If it's like just straight up hand-to-hand fighting, yeah, Leela. But if there's more like distance and planning, I think I'd give it to Ace.
Though. What about with Queensberry rules?
Queens rules, it's Leela. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm with on both. With both questions, preference and violence.
Yeah.
I'm with Leela.
Yeah. Okay. Violence.
I would maybe go for Ace preference wise, just to be difficult.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. Ace was great.
Yeah.
Ace laid the groundwork for all of the awesomeness of the new series companions.
Those awesome new series companions.
So,
more proactive.
Yeah, this is true.
In my world, Leela and Ace work together to kill Rose. And they build a friendship and they don't fight. That's my world.
You write that fan fiction, Josh.
It's on my hard drive. I just have to publish it.
Wow.
Quarks versus Mechanoids.
Oh.
Mechanoids are those big spherical guys.
Yeah, the spherical guys.
Yeah. And the quarks are their arms.
Yeah, their arms are like, yeah.
I think Leela would be both of them.
Okay. Yeah. For benefits of those listening to a podcast, their arms are like this.
Can we throw the crotons in there, too?
Sure.
Actually, the crotons are not mechanically based.
I know, they're a silicon-based life form.
Okay,
we'll save the crotons for another day.
All right. Kelvin and Pat lose. That's it.
I think so.
I like the mechanoids myself. Yeah. I have a weird mechanoid fetish, possibly.
They have flamethrowers.
The flamethrowers, like, they're just totally redundant to be...
There's 101 household uses for a mechanoid.
they tried to make those into the new Daleks. They were going to be, like, the new big thing after Dalek Mania.
Yeah.
The little mechanoid toys. That didn't work.
That didn't work out at all. So much. Failed. Yeah. River Song versus Handles.
Did we decide on that?
Yeah, mechanoids.
Oh, did
Hello?
We?
Hello.
Oh, excuse me.
River Song and Handles.
River Song and Handles?
Well, pure preference, Handles.
Yeah. Emotional support, Handles.
ability to comprehend storyline, Handles.
Handles.
Cheap Benny ripoff, River Song.
Yes. Final lightning round right here. Unit versus the Torchwood Institute. I like when they put Institute to make it somehow sound more cerebral.
It's very precise, but that's the one before it got blown up on Canary Wharf, right?
I'd probably give it to Unit, but I think hanging out with Torchwood would be more fun.
Really?
Well, there might be sex.
And on that note,
I think there was plenty of slow, sad 70s British sex with Unit.
The best kind. Slow, sad 70s British. I love that. You say it like it's a genre.
I think there's
Unit takes its time.
There's no better phrase to end a podcast on than slow, sad 70s Unit sex. So thank you, everybody. That's our podcast. We'd like to thank you, yes, you guys, for being here, and our guest, Joseph Scrimshaw, and Console Room for having us. If you enjoyed the podcast, please visit our website, getoffmyworldpodcast.com, subscribe on iTunes, or like us on Facebook. Until next time, I'm Joshua.
I'm Pat.
I'm Kelvin.
I'm Joseph.
And we're saying, get off my world!
Civilized gentleman.
Thank you, sir.